and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski hosts Tennessee Senator Bob Corker for a talk on U.S. foreign policy and Alaska. Senator Corker is currently a ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He and Senator Murkowski served on the Senate Energy Committee together for 4 years. This forum was hosted by Commonwealth North. It was recorded October 28th at the Anchorage Marriott downtown. Commonwealth North President Eric Woolforth starts us off.
This is the Commonwealth North Forum, U.S. Foreign Policy and Alaska. We're welcome today, our U.S. Senator, Lisa Murkowski, and U.S. Senator Bob Corker, whom we will hear from. I'm Eric Woolforth, President of Commonwealth North for this year, and I count as my most outstanding achievement of the year the fact that I moved the time for our morning meetings from 7 to 7:30. But in driving here this morning and thinking about that achievement and basking in it, I was reminded of the fact that we are a nonpartisan think tank group, operating in the milieu of a very intense partisan election. Our mantra is dialogue, listening to all sides, and listening hard to all sides, and coming to a conclusion based on facts. And to that end, we have several study groups right now on energy and on fiscal policy, which you are cordially welcome to join if you're not already a member. So we're a nonpartisan group dialoguing in an intense political climate, which to me demonstrates the need for our group and its mission even more pointedly than ever. I'd like now to introduce our head table, and starting with the far left, we have Jim Hemseth, who's the Project Development and Asset Management Director at ADA, Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. Next to him, our U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, Alaska's Senior Senator and the ranking member of the U.S. Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. And next to her, we have our guest speaker, Senator Bob Corker, who is a senator from Tennessee and the ranking member of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee. On my immediate right, Greg Wolf, Executive Director of the World Trade Center. And finally, and we welcome him with great pleasure, our member, our Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell. Welcome, Meade. Please welcome our head table. On your table, there are question cards. Please write your questions on the cards and hold them up so the staff can bring them to the head table for a Q&A at the end of the presentation. That presentation will end and we'll exit at 8:30. Senator Corker tells me that's timely enough for his plane, which he's catching shortly afterwards. I'd like to acknowledge the sponsors of today's program, which include Wells Fargo Bank, Alaska Industrial and Development Authority, known as ADA, and the law firm of Birch, Horton, Bittner, and Chereau. It's businesses and members like that that enable us to fulfill our mission and to bring you programs like this today. Thank you for your support. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski joined the Senate in 2002. She's the first Alaska-born senator and only the sixth United States senator to serve our state. I mentally went over that in my mind this morning. You can count up to six. She is the sixth member. She's the ranking member of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee and also serves on the Senate Appropriations Committee, where she's the ranking the Republican of the Interior and Environmental Subcommittee. She's a member of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, the first Alaskan to serve on that panel, and also a senior member of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee. Please help me welcome Senator Lisa Murkowski, who will introduce Senator Corker.
Eric, thank you, and I certainly applaud the move from 7 to 7:30. Even a little extra 20 minutes helps us in the morning, or at least this person. I know Senator Corker is still on Tennessee time, so I think he was an early bird this morning. But thank you for the opportunity to spend about an hour talking about these issues that are so pertinent to Alaska, so pertinent to our nation, and so relevant to what is happening in the world today. I don't know about you, but with all the stuff that's hitting us right now, with the campaigns, the politics, the elections, it's kind of nice to talk about policy. Wow, what a breath of fresh air. And that's what we should be doing, ladies and gentlemen, because right now we have we've got some real issues in front of us. We have some issues, whether it's from a foreign policy perspective, whether it's from an energy policy perspective, a lot of different areas. We've got our work cut out for us, because at the federal level, in this person's view, we're struggling right now. We're struggling to kind of find that path forward. Let's talk about energy policy just for a minute here, because this is so near and dear to the hearts of so many. Either you work in the industry, or as our folks here at the Wells Fargo table know, if the economy's not healthy, it's tough to do any lending. Things just don't circulate as we will. We're sitting here as an energy-producing state, and we are struggling. We made it through the summer with a very contentious debate about our taxing policy. We're on the other side of that, but there's more to life than just the stability that a taxing policy is about. We have an oil pipeline that is less than half full. From a national perspective, not just from Alaska's perspective, where we're looking for the jobs and we're looking for the energy resource, but from a national perspective, this should be a priority for us as a nation, ensuring that this incredible asset that we have is utilized to its fullest potential. And yet, in many ways, we're not in the game right now. Well, why not? Why are we seeing North Dakota, Oklahoma, Texas, even California increasing their production, and Alaska is lagging? It's not because we don't have the resource, we know that. It's what is coming at us by way of the regulation, kind of the holdup from a regulatory perspective. We've all heard the promises about we're going to be supporting oil and gas production within our NPRA and offshore, but what we're seeing really is more the opposite. What we're seeing are the costs, the bureaucratic delays. The reality for us is we're seeing less access and not more. And all you need to do is look to the NPRA. Last year, more than 22 million acres were available for development. Come forward to where we are right now. Today, less than half of that is available because the administration has placed more than 11 million acres of our petroleum reserve off limits to development. Now, there was a big announcement a few weeks ago. The administration announces we're going to be announcing new leases available in the NPRA. I didn't do cartwheels when I read the press release, because our reality is that you can promise as much available for leasing, but if you can't deliver on access, it's pretty tough to get excited about the ability that you have to pay for something that you can't access. I sat down with Mike Connor last week. He was up for AFN. He's the undersecretary there at Department of Interior. And I talked to him about what we have going, how long it's going to take before we have some certainty as to whether or not Conoco is going to be able to move to allow for a road, a small connector road. We're not talking about big development here, folks. We're talking about small connector roads. And at this point in time, it's uncertain. It's uncertain. So when you take acreage offline, when you make access limited, you can't tell me that this is an all-of-the-above energy policy. It's not translating that way here in this state. And that's just talking NPRA. We haven't even talked about the offshore and the fact that we're still to this day waiting for the exploratory regs that were promised months ago, actually, quite honestly, years ago. We're still waiting for that. And we're told it's going to be here by the end of the year. That gives Shell about that much time to determine whether or not they can commit or not commit to going forward into the next season. If you're trying to move millions and billions of assets and you don't have certainty from an administration, what do you do? What do you do? It's almost like this all of the above concept, this notion that we're all in on it, it doesn't necessarily include all 50 states. They may as well be saying we're all of the above is really everything below the Arctic Circle or really below the 49th parallel, because right now it's not translating to us here in Alaska. Because you are the think tank of the North, because you are focused in so many different areas and most particularly energy, I want to toot my own horn just a second this morning before I introduce our guest. On the Energy Committee, we've been doing some good work when it comes to energy policy for this country. But more recently, we've been pressing out on energy and how it intersects with foreign policy. What we are seeing right now over in Iraq, over in Syria, the oil outages that have come to the world because of political unrest and disruption, what that means. We released a white paper on this just a couple weeks ago. A week before that, introduced another white paper on Iraq and the energy situation, the energy nexus there. A further white paper on oil sales and how they have funded ISIS and what that means going forward. It's pretty meaty stuff. And knowing how much you love the meat, I'll just tell you, it's good stuff, it's readable, it's good factual information that is helpful for us now. There's so much happening in the world that gets Alaska's attention, and it's not just on the energy side. We're sitting pretty close to Russia on this side, we know it. But the rest of the country has been focused on what's going on within Ukraine. We keep an eye on North Korea, a very close eye on North Korea as it continues to advance its nuclear capabilities. Where we sit on the globe kind of puts us in a key and an integral spot. And I worry about it. I worry about it as an Alaskan. I worry about it as one who is tasked with ensuring that we are safe in this country. And then you look at what's going on in the Middle East. We've got this murderous caliphate that's emerged in Iraq and Syria, and the president saying he's not sure he's got a clear strategy. That doesn't make me feel very comfortable, because you all are coming to me saying, what is the strategy? Everyone's talking about Ebola and that situation and how we're just kind of fumbling our way through. So our threats are significant. They're real. We need strong leadership, and we need clear vision to overcome them and get us back to track. And that's why I'm so pleased this morning to be able to introduce you to my friend and colleague, Bob Corker. He's a strong businessman. He was mayor of Chattanooga. Since 2007, he's been serving Tennessee in the U.S. Senate. He's not only been a friend to me, I think it's fair to say he's been a friend to Alaska. He understands our issues, even though he will confess this is his first visit. Hopefully it's not his last. He's been with me on the Energy Committee for about 4 years, and I can tell you, there's few senators that really engage, roll their sleeves up as much, listen so hard as Senator Corker has. He is one of our leaders in the Senate on banking policies. He's worked on efforts to strengthen our border security. He's really earned a reputation as a problem solver in the Senate, working with both parties. He's the top Republican on the Foreign Relations Committee, so eminently qualified to speak on these issues of the day. A lot of folks back east are talking about Bob Corker. They're throwing his name around in 2016. I don't think it's because he necessarily wants to run for president, but because some of us think that this gentleman is exactly the type of individual that has what it takes to give leadership and direction to our country. And with that, I introduce my friend and colleague, Senator Bob Corker.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much, and I appreciate not only the invitation to be here, and she invites us all often, I assure you. It is a little bit of a ways here from Chattanooga, where I left yesterday morning to be here, but Lisa, I cannot thank you enough for your friendship, and even though my glimpse of Alaska is going to be brief, I'm catching, and dark, that's right, but I understand the wintertime is that way a lot, summertime not so much, but I just want to say to you that I'm so glad to be here, even though it's less than a 24-hour stay, for this reason. I've wondered a lot, and one of the reasons that I'm here is because of what's happening with the midterm elections, and I'm going to speak very briefly to that. I asked Eric what the protocol was here. I can't even speak in a partisan tone in partisan settings. Just not who I am. I'm a policy person. I want to solve our nation's problems, and so I very much appreciate all of you coming together. But the reason I'm so glad to be here in person, in addition to seeing one of the candidates and being with him last night, I am so fascinated to see up close and personal and meet so many people that are such a part of our nation's energy structure, if you will. And I cannot imagine anything better for the economy of the United States of America and our place in the world and the effects that over time a really, really strong and productive energy policy would have relative to us and the world. I cannot imagine anything better than Lisa Murkowski being chairman of the Energy Committee for the United States. I really cannot. And I've watched Lisa. Lisa is somebody who is so sound and, of course, knowledgeable. You just heard her, and you know that well because you know her. And I don't know how anybody can win a write-in race here in Alaska or any other state, but she did it, and it's a testament to how people here in this state know and respect her. But Lisa, seriously, I've told you this, and I've told others this. The reason these midterms are interesting to me is not because I long to have a gavel. It's because I've been in the United States Senate now for 8 years in the minority. I was the only new Republican to be elected in the United States Senate in 2006. We have not yet solved one major problem that our nation faces. Not one. The big issues of the day, we skate, we kick the can down the road, we wait until after the next election. And so the reason I'm so interested is that I want to see us begin to solve our nation's problems. And so, yes, this is important to me, not because of one team winning out over the other, not because of the shirts beating the skins, none of that. I just believe we're at a place in our nation's history where together we've got to begin to solve our nation's problems. And again, I think about Lisa chairing the Energy Committee, the way she has the ability to work with others. I look at other people doing the same thing, and Lisa, I really do believe it will be a very different day if you have that opportunity. And again, thank you for your service. I actually put the nation's issues into three boxes. And I know that not all of them will be addressed adequately over this next 2 years, regardless of what happens in the election. But I put them in three boxes, and that is, number one, and we're wrestling with this right now, and Lisa alluded to several of the issues, what is America's place in the world going to be? The nation is divided. People constantly know that American leadership makes the world a better place, but at the same time, wonder what the depth of that should be. And I'm going to speak to that in just one moment. But us defining what the United States' role in the world is over the next 2 years, to me, is a very important thing for us to do. Because what happens is that when people don't understand expectations, they don't understand what responses may occur, you actually create a scenario where even greater conflict and chaos can evolve. Secondly, the big economic issues of the day. Still today, we have not done the things that we as a nation all know we need to do to spur economic growth. And while we're growing, and while certainly unemployment is down, the fact is we still have not done the things that Republicans and Democrats both know we need to do, and that is to address tax reform in a meaningful way where you don't have to create a situation where you keep people here through policies like Hotel California. You remember the song, you can check in, but you can never check out. A better way of doing it would be to create policies that actually cause people to want to be here and do business, right? And then the third issue, which, again, I know almost no one in this room is focused on, and almost no one in the nation is probably focused on, and that is the fiscal issues that our nation faces. To me, it's still the biggest threat. I'm sorry. When I travel the world, our allies in places like Japan and South Korea, still that's the first question they ask me is about our fiscal issues, because they wonder whether we as a nation will continue to be able to honor the obligations we have. But I'm here about the first. Lisa's right. I woke up this morning, and I'm still on Chattanooga time. I want to stay pretty close to that. I'm going to Colorado and then Kansas and then back home. And I set my alarm early, and my first call was John Kerry. And he just wanted to touch base, and it was really a great precursor for this conversation because of all the issues that our nation is facing. Let me just sort of walk through them. First, the issue that Lisa mentioned, ISIS in Syria and Iraq. I've been in the Senate now for 8 years, as I mentioned, and while I think the reservoir of knowledge I was telling somebody earlier that you gain by just being around it is pretty phenomenal, at the same time, you stay there long enough, you can actually see the things that were predicted and predictable, unfortunately, in some cases come to fruition. I think all of you know the ingredients that led to us being where we are today. Number one, we've had a really terrible prime minister in Iraq. Maliki was a really bad prime minister, and, you know, sort of the old Middle East mentality, one and done. Concentrate power to yourself, shun the other side. In essence, he helped create the problems that hugely helped create the problems we have in Iraq now by not reaching out to the Sunni population, and therefore they became very open to extremists being in their mix and pursuing efforts against the Shia population. Number two, candidly, our withdrawal in 2011. Been a lot of debate about how that all happened, but I think it's pretty evident at this point that not everyone together was convinced at the administration level that that was something to do. I might add, and Alaska knows this probably more than most states, We have 28,500 troops today in South Korea, and they're certainly not in harm's way. They don't wake up in the morning thinking that they're going to be in conflict, but what do? They provide a stabilizing force there, and that's what so many of us were pushing to have happen at the time. And then thirdly, the fact that we've had no policy whatsoever in Syria. I believe in years in the future, we're going to look back on Syria as being one of the greatest humanitarian crises that we've seen during this era. I really believe that. And the fact that we did what we did 14 months ago when Assad obviously used chemical weapons against 1,200 people there within his own population, probably the smartest thing, sounds really crass, that he could do to keep himself in survival. Our non-response to that certainly has created what is happening there on the ground. So obviously this was predicted. It was predictable. And now we have a situation where all of a sudden we're having to align with enemies, candidly, to try to create a solution to a problem that candidly was festered and made much, much worse by the lack of efforts that have taken place. So now we have a situation where we're somewhat helping the moderate opposition. We have some training that is taking place in Saudi Arabia, where they're allegedly paying for it. We're doing the training. So we're somewhat helping them. I've been in refugee camps where I actually have begun to know people. I've been there so often. And to look at their eyes and for them to look at us and say that, and know that we did not do the things that we told them we would do early on. We urged them on. The United States of America urged them on and left, and yet we've left them hanging. So here we have Assad bombing them while we're bombing ISIS. And everyone understands that this is a policy that cannot continue. And so after the election, same thing I said this morning, I know this is not something that candidates want to talk about during an election, that an administration wants to talk about during an election. But I'm hopeful that as soon as it's over, we'll begin to piece something together that makes sense, because the whole world watches and understands that as we're moving ahead now, there is no solution to what's happening in Syria. 200,000 people have been murdered with barrel bombs and chemical weapons still being used against the people of Syria. And hopefully our nation, in combination with others, will be able to piece together a policy, a strategy that, even though it's going to take years to come to an end, a strategy that will bring some sense of sensibility to what we're doing in that country. In Iran, where November 24th is the big date, where we'll know whether there's going to be an agreement or not. I talked at length with Wendy Sherman 2 weeks ago in Vienna as she was negotiating. Obviously, all of us want to see an agreement reached with Iran. None of us want to see that turn into something worse than it is today. But many of us are concerned that what Iran is really doing right now is trying to negotiate a series of interim agreements where over time the international will to continue to keep in place the sanctions that we have will dissipate. And I think it's very important. This is the role for Congress to play, is to ensure that we don't just end up with an agreement for an agreement's sake. And certainly that's something this morning that we talked about at length on the phone. Thirdly, I'll mention Russia and Ukraine. And while there may be issues that Alaskans are focused on relative to Russia that maybe other parts of the world are not, I know that talking to Meade, what they're doing up in the Arctic region with the icebreakers certainly is something that's very important to this part of the world. But I will just tell you, again, this cautious role that we've played where it seems that we're always a day late and a dollar short. When Russia had 40,000 troops on the border of Ukraine, when no Russians were yet inside eastern Ukraine, when the little green men had not yet appeared inside eastern Ukraine, to me that was the time for us and for Europe, but certainly us, to put in place sectoral sanctions to push them back. We hesitated, we did small things that actually didn't show a lot of resolve, and over time, as you know, they made their way into eastern Ukraine. We could actually listen to them on the phone as people would take over city halls inside eastern Ukraine and call back and talk to people in Russia with asking directions as to what they should do. And now we're in a situation where I fear we're going to end up in a frozen conflict. Thankfully, there was a great election this last week. Poroshenko and Yatsenyuk, who's a prime minister, they have two opposing parties, but their two parties together got a lot of the vote. It's evident the people of Ukraine have turned west. Obviously, we encourage that. That's what we did as a nation. And yet again, I feel like that in order to, in some ways, to almost cause Russia to feel like we weren't going to be provocative in any way, we let them do some things that are going to be very difficult now to undo. It's almost as if we let the genie out of the bottle. It's going to be very difficult to get Putin. I don't know if you read his comments yesterday in front of the media, as he really damned, if you will, the United States of America and the West. And we've created almost a, I don't want to use an inappropriate word here, but we've created something that's going to be very difficult for him to step down off of, because the people inside Russia are now looking at him and riding this wave of nationalism. And because, again, we didn't early on push back economically, very, very difficult situation, and yet we need them in Syria. They know we need them. We need Iran in Syria, and all of these things are complicating the negotiations that are occurring right now with Iran and other countries. And then lastly, China. I was just in Southeast Asia. This is one bright spot to me, and the reason I say it's a bright spot, I think our nation is very aware of the dominance that China is trying to play in the Southeast China Sea. We were in Vietnam, Malaysia, Singapore, and the Philippines, and it's very evident with the drawing this 9 dashed lines. It's basically undoing thousands of years of territorial history. It's very evident that China's doing what they can. For what reason? When you talk to intellectuals over there, they'll tell you, because they can. And one of the most important things that we can do as a nation is really push to secure this Trans-Pacific Partnership, which will link us with countries in the region and give them an opportunity to move away from Chinese dominance, but at the same time cause us to have the opportunity to bring them in to the kind of thinking that we in the West have, that moves away from state-owned enterprises, that moves towards making sure you have free enterprise, that you respect human rights. And so I think that's actually a tremendous opportunity for us. And because I always like to take questions, because I feel that's the only way I have the opportunity to really address what is on your mind, I want to close at this point, and hopefully Eric will let me take a few questions and responses. Maybe you want to ask Lisa a few of those, but I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here at 7:30 in the morning with people here in Anchorage that are focused on policy. I know that's what causes Lisa to get up in the morning. I know that because I watch her. I'm proud to serve with somebody like Lisa Murkowski. I can assure you in the mornings when I wake up, it's not who's in charge, it's how we're going to solve these problems. I think I've demonstrated that. I'm glad to be here this morning, and I'd be glad to take any questions and comments that you might have. Thank you for letting me be here.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with U.S. Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee. You heard from Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski at the top of the hour. Corker's talk on U.S. foreign policy was hosted by Commonwealth North. It was recorded October 28th at the Anchorage Marriott downtown. From here on out, the talk moves into a question and answer period with the audience. This is Commonwealth North President Eric Woolforth on the mic.
So with the questions, not surprisingly, and here's some more.
And please don't ask me about the Arctic.
Oops. Well, my friend on my right had a couple of questions on the Arctic. There are a group of questions that have to do with U.S. energy policy and strategic problems in the Middle East, and what can we do in this country via our energy policy. And one question specifically talked about a lifting a total U.S. ban on exports. What can we do on energy policy to help meet the Middle East problem?
So this is Bob Corker responding. I have no idea the Lisa knows so much more about energy than I do. She lives it and breathes it and knows this state so well and knows the issues so well. But I do believe that we should lift the ban on petroleum exports. And there may be things that we wish to look at in that regard, but I believe we should lift it because I think what that will do is spur even greater development. One of the things that has been concern, Eric, is that the Middle East somehow, if you really think about some of U.S. policy, some of U.S. policy has been about wanting to ensure that as we approach the Middle East, nothing is done to upset the world economy because energy prices have such a big effect on how the economy here but around the world is. And so if you look at the Suez Canal, the Straits, if you look at all the things that we look at relative to the Middle East, it's always about the cost of energy and how it's going to affect the world. Not everything we do there is about that, but it's a big factor. And so I think the role that the United States is playing in increasing the amount of world oil supply to me is of geopolitical importance. It allows us to address the Middle East in a very different way. And thankfully, the United States now, because of the tremendous amounts of energy that we brought online, is affecting energy prices. Now, it cuts both ways. A great story this morning in the Wall Street Journal, and I'm getting a lot of concerns by people about what may be happening actually with energy companies right now and whether people are beginning to short them and what the effect of that is going to be over the longer term. But no doubt, Eric, I believe we should lift the ban. I believe it's important for us to do. I believe it'll drive even more exploration. I believe it's good for our economy, and I believe it's good for the United States geopolitically.
Thank you, Senator. I just can't let you off the hook on the Arctic because I have so many questions here, some from my colleague on the right. And one question he puts so nicely, I'm gonna quote it in full. Putin controls Arctic shipping. Putin drills offshore. We don't. What's your solution? Icebreakers? Investment? Sending the Navy? Another question talks about the fact that the law of sea limit. Now there's some indication that sending a tax to this international seabed authority is holding back conservative support. It's important to Alaskans that law of the sea be ratified finally by the Senate. How do we solve this question of conservatives holding back if there's a tax indicated? So, Senator, you have your choice on those questions.
Yeah, no.
Either one or both.
Yeah. The reason on the Arctic, I was being somewhat flipping there. I mean, there's so much knowledge in this room. I mean, Mead and I talked back in the back of the room, and I know he sits on a panel that's very involved in that. Lisa, obviously, has led so many efforts. I think both of them are going to Iceland tomorrow. There's such a vast array of knowledge in this room. I hate to talk about it as someone who I know is the least knowledgeable in the room relative to, is that in my, yeah. Yeah, thank you. I'll take all the help I can get in that regard. Look, on the Arctic, I don't know that I know the answer. I would seek the guidance of Mead and Lisa in that regard. On Law of the Sea Treaty, just for what it's worth, it was brought up, I think most people remember that actually George Bush began the effort on Law of the Sea. Reagan had some issues with it, and there's been different revelations, if you will, as to what internally the administration actually felt about the treaty itself. It's evolved some. We've actually never had a real hearing on Law of the Sea. I've told people I'm open. I will tell you, as we talked to many of the businesses who came before our committee to be witnesses on Law of the Sea, their heart wasn't in it. Just wasn't on the... Of the list of 10 items that they cared about, Law of the Sea just wasn't one of those that mattered much. The Navy obviously has been very interested in it. But I'll just say to you again, Eric, we haven't had what I would call a full hearing on the issue. You're right. There are there are always concerns with any treaty that involves the United Nations. I'm sorry, that's just the case. I think there's reason for skepticism when you deal with the United Nations on many issues. But here's what I'll say to this group, as I've said to others in Tennessee. I'm more than glad to look in detail at the Law of the Sea Treaty. If it's in our national interest, then certainly I want to support it. If it's not, then I don't. At present, again, the commercial interests have really not come forward. The ones that you're talking about right now that really want to explore both petroleum but also precious metals and others, they really haven't put forth a case of concern, and it's been one of those things that's just lacked energy because we've had so many other things to deal with. But I know it's important to Alaska. If I could, I'm going to read another question here you're not bringing up. There's an issue here that somebody brings up, taxing the rich. And I do believe this, that in our nation, I went in business when I was 25 with $8,000, and I built a business that ended up operating all around our country in 18 states, and I loved it. And I've always thought that that being a businessman was something exceptional. And I think the culture within that you're able to set within your company is so important. And I watch people move from laborer to carpenter to foreman to superintendent to project manager to vice president to executive. I watch what it did to their families. The impact that it had on how they viewed the world. And somehow or another, since 2008, with this financial crisis, that I was very involved in trying to deal with the solutions as a new senator, somehow something's happened in our nation where it seems that somehow business is not as good as it used to be. Business is not something that is honorable. There's a tone that I think is very inappropriate for a nation that has done so well because of our embrace, if you will, of the free enterprise system. And I think that's something that certainly our next president, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, really needs to change. I think that, you know, the fact is, as a nation, what we should not be doing is trying to pull down a group of people. We shouldn't be focused, to me, on the 1%. What we should be focused on as a nation is the bottom 50% and wanting them to have the same opportunities that everyone else in our nation, that others in our nation have, not everyone else. But that to me is a whole paradigm change, and it really is disappointing to see businesses who in some cases make mistakes, and certainly I was with one last night that I know made a big one several years ago, but businesses create jobs. Businesses create wealth. Businesses break through. Businesses, to me, are something that should be held up. And obviously, we need to have appropriate regulations. But I think the tone in this nation has got to change. I really think that the tone itself is one of the things that's actually holding back our economy. And no doubt, the regulations, as we try to regulate behavior in ways that meet, to me, that are overreach, is one of the bigger issues that's affecting our nation. So hopefully that'll change. That's probably going to take presidential leadership. And hopefully, again, whether it's Republican or Democrat, it'll happen in 2016.
Thank you.
Listen, thank y'all for letting me be here. It is a pleasure. I hope to be back in the summertime when people spend more time outside. And I cannot thank you enough for having an outstanding senator like Lisa Murkowski. Hopefully another one will be with us very, very soon. I hope the direction of our, I think that, let me just say this. I want to close with this. I had a call from the president the other day from Air Force One about a foreign policy issue. And I told him before we got into the foreign policy issue, I kidded him about the fact, number one, that he was probably going to a fundraiser. He didn't laugh. It was a joke. It really was. But I went on to say to him that if you look at what's been happening in Washington, where House members send bills over to the Senate that have no chance of becoming law, Senate Democrats bring up bills that have no chance of coming out of the Senate, that in fact where our nation has been is in a totally dysfunctional place. That not only do I believe it's good for our nation that Congress be controlled by one party, but I think that it's good for him. I really believe that. And I hope that what's going to happen after this election is that it is controlled by one party. I hope, obviously, that, and the only way that can happen is if Republicans win the Senate. But the reason I say that is that means that Republicans will have to be responsible.
Just a quick reminder here, Senator Corker spoke in Anchorage the week before the November 4th election. Republicans do now control the U.S. Senate.
And if they are, if we are, we can actually begin to solve the nation's problems. If the White House is responsible, we have an opportunity to begin doing some of those things that I talked about a minute ago, where for 8 years, we have not yet addressed fully one of the major issues that our nation faces, not one. And so the reason I'm here in this state, the reason I'm going to Kansas and I'm going to Colorado, is that I hope for the first time in 8 years, Republicans will be in a position to actually be responsible and govern and put forth legislation that actually solve our nation's problems. And that as a result, the White House will also be responsible. And together, for the last 2 years of this administration, we'll have a period of time that is the most productive that we've had in some time, that our nation will begin to get some of the big issues that we have behind us and will begin to flourish even more so in a way that we know we can. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Senator Corker and Senator Murkowski. Those were two really, really fine addresses, and we appreciate so much your being with us this morning, and we hope we'll see you again soon, sir.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans. You heard from Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski at the top of the hour, followed by U.S. Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee. Murkowski and Corker served together on the Senate Energy Committee. This talk on U.S. foreign policy and Alaska was hosted by Commonwealth North. It was recorded October 28th at the Anchorage Marriott. Thanks for tuning in with us today on Addressing Alaskans. I'm your host and producer, Monica Goki.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.